You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Nut channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern and 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. All of your text messages, all of your reaction, all of your questions for maybe this weekend, maybe going into the Suns game this week. We want to hear from you, 331-979-1369. Welcome back from the weekend. We've got a great interview today for you. Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation is going to join us, give his Bulls thoughts, give his college basketball thoughts so far this season. We talk a lot about Zion Williamson among a lot of the other top prospects. So this is a really good episode to take a look, an early look at least, at what might be available at the top of the lottery, where the Bulls might end up, and if they've got a shot, legitimate shot, at that number one pick next year, what they should do with the core coming when they come back from injury, what should the Bulls do, and what's the best outcome there. So all of that and so much more with Ricky. You can follow him on social media on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. Follow all of his work at SB Nation as well. Without further ado, here's Ricky O'Donnell.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite guys to talk to, our good friend Ricky O'Donnell. He is a college hoops editor and NBA writer for SB Nation. You can also catch him with a couple of new podcasts of his own in the world of basketball. We'll get to that a little later on in today's show. Follow him on Twitter, as always, at @SBN_Ricky. Ricky, what's up, buddy? Have you washed the stain of that Friday, Saturday back-to-back off of yourself yet?
What's going on, guys? I think that I picked a really bad year to start a new Bulls podcast. This is just horrible to watch. And, you know, I think at this point, all of us Bulls fans just deserve some sort of light at the end of the tunnel, because between last year and now this year, it's just been really brutal.
Hey, man, if Jordan and I have learned anything, Bulls fans are gluttons for punishment, because for some reason, people still listen to us talk about this team five times a week. So I think with you and Jay doing what you're doing over there, I'm sure you'll find that you're going to build a listenership of loyal Bulls fans pretty quickly, because whether or not they want to be believers or they hate what's going on, either way, this fan base has a lot of opinions.
It's really true. And you know, I just don't know how we're all going to make it through this for a second year in a row. This already feels so much worse than last year, and you can just start with the back-to-backs from this weekend, blowing that big lead against the Bucks, and then just, you know, rolling over basically against Toronto. Just not a good look for Fred Hoiberg or anyone in this organization right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, comparing this to last year's 3-20 start, at least you saw a little bit. Like, Markkanen was out there. We got a chance to see Dunn in a few different situations. But I felt like once they got Portis back, once they got Mirotić back, all of a sudden they went on this short run and things started to look a little bit better. Things were clicking more basketball sense-wise than anything else. And now we're watching this team, and while they're 4-12, this team doesn't look like a team that they should that should be 4-12. It looks like a team that should maybe have one or two wins this season. And you know, going up against some of the best teams over the last 2.5 weeks or so, I thought they played well against teams like the Nuggets and teams to follow up. But then you go up against Boston and the Bucks and the Raptors all in the same stretch. Zach LaVine looks tired. They gave him the night off on Saturday, but they still get blown out. So is there any positives at all that you've taken away from this Bulls team before we get into some of the other negatives?
Well, I mean, I do think there have been positives, even though this has been a brutal year. You could definitely start with Wendell Carter Jr. To me, he's the team's biggest keeper. If I could only, like, protect one guy on this roster from other teams, it would be Wendell Carter. I think he looks tremendous. To me, he just has the complete skill set of a big man that you want. He can do the sort of the rim protection or screen and dive game, like a lob finisher. He can shoot a little bit, even though he has a bit of a slow release. I think he's going to eventually be a really good shooter. He already seems like a leader, too, which this team desperately needs. So I think, you know, he was a guy who coming into the season, Bulls fans who pay attention to the draft and stuff, thought that he could be a really good player. I would say he's lived up to the hype 100%. He's probably even exceeded it. When you think about how steep the learning curve is defensively for young big men, he's mastered that immediately at age 19. It's really incredible. So I think, you know, if you're looking for a reason to stay invested in the Bulls and to have hope for the future, you start with Wendell Carter. I also think LaVine's been really good. And now LaVine probably isn't in his ideal role in terms of his long-term fit in the league and with the Bulls. He's even said himself he just has no help. And when he's not scoring 30 points a game, it seems like the Bulls have no chance. But I do think that he's been better than expected, certainly. He definitely looks like he has the full offensive skill set in terms of, you know, that explosive first step. The ability to just change directions in the lane on the drive is basically unguardable when you don't have the entire defense keying in on him. His stroke has looked good off the dribble and off the catch. So I think LaVine's been good. I think, you know, ideally he's probably a number two guy. The Bulls would want to add someone to make him kind of the Kyrie to someone else's LeBron. Maybe that's Zion Williamson, or maybe that player just doesn't exist because we're talking about someone who would be a, you know, a franchise changing star. But I think LaVine's been good, and, you know, Bulls fans, I think, can be feeling good about that contract in general, just because of LaVine's age and sort of the way he's produced at the start of this season.
Okay, so we covered the positives. Zach LaVine offensively certainly looks good. Wendell Carter looks like a stud as a rookie. Now let's get to the other side. Let's start talking about the negatives, because there's a lot of them. Ricky, I don't know about you, I was surprised to see Fred Hoiberg go back to campaign and put him in that starting lineup on Saturday night, with LaVine getting the night off, playing a backcourt pair of Cam and Archie. And then, you know, of course, keeping the rest of that with Jabari, Wendell, and Holiday. I mean, after we saw the worst of the worst of good Cam versus bad Cam in that middle stretch of games earlier this season, campaign, other than a couple of garbage time minutes leading up to that game against Toronto Saturday, was a DNP. So I was surprised to see him go from back end of the rotation, not even in the rotation, to getting another opportunity to start when he certainly didn't look like he deserved it. I was, you know, people were talking about why not give, you know, throw Blakeney in there, throw Shaq Harrison in there. At least he's looked aggressive on the defensive end. Or, hey, maybe give Chandler Hutchison another crack at the starting, starting five. What were your thoughts on that? And what do you think Fred should do if, God forbid, there's another opportunity or another situation where LaVine isn't in the starting lineup and before Chris Dunn gets back? Because to me, I don't see any point in playing campaign any meaningful minutes anymore.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those things that people like us don't see. Like, maybe Hoiberg didn't want to lose the locker room campaign. I've talked to him a few times. He's like a really personable, cool guy. I'm sure the people on the team like him. After essentially getting DNP'd the night before when the Bulls blow that big lead against Milwaukee, you probably just don't want to lose a young player like that and someone who's part of the team's fabric. So I think that might have been part of the reasoning. The other thing, too, is that Hoiberg wants to keep the Harrison-Blakeney combo, I think, on the bench. Blakeney's skill set definitely fits best as sort of that, go-to guy off the bench who can just chuck shots and get buckets. Harrison complements him well defensively because he can actually get in offensive player's shirts. He can guard multiple positions. So I think that in general, Hoiberg was probably just trying to, you know, throw campaign a bone and give him a chance after the team in general really let him down the night before. But, you know, as we've seen, I think that campaign probably isn't an NBA player, and his stay in Chicago is going to be really short.
The other thing that I have a question about is the Bulls' adjustments at halftime. You know, you look at the Bulls team, fairly over the last 2 weeks or so, they've had good starts. They've had good first quarters. I mean, outside of the Raptors game, but not having LaVine kind of makes a world of a difference for this Bulls team. But outside of that, like, look over the last 2 weeks or so, the first quarters have been off to good starts and even hung around till halftime. And then halftime comes and the Bulls come out, even the last two games, 12 points against the Raptors, 17 points in the third quarter against the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, they combined for 40 points in the second and third quarter. So what's going on at halftime that the Bulls all of a sudden can't adjust to the other teams? And all of a sudden the blowout starts happening in the third quarter. Are you noticing it that much, as much as I'm noticing it this year? And why hasn't Hoiberg tried to change anything up? And why is this continuing to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. It was something I was going to bring up. In the third quarter against Milwaukee, they get outscored 46-17. In the third quarter against Toronto the next night, it's 32-12. So I don't really know what to point to for that. To me, it's just like the Bulls get comfortable and they sort of take their lot for granted, I think. It's something that Wendell Carter has been saying in the media over the last week, that this team sort of falls apart when the going gets tough. So I think that that's something that, you know, the emergence of a leader like Carter, if that were to happen, it's a lot to expect from a 19-year-old. But I think, you know, in the future, he certainly fits that profile. The emergence of a leader like that could just do wonders. I think that, you know, that starts with communicating on the defensive end. That starts with people taking personal responsibility for what's happening on the court and not just throwing their hands up and realizing, you know, the games are over before they start, because the way the Bulls have been coming out in the second half has just been pathetic lately. And I think it's, you know, really just a symptom of them getting too comfortable and playing for themselves and not playing for each other.
We're talking with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation here on Locked On Bulls. Follow him on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. Ricky, let's now talk about the guy who has been perhaps one of the most polarizing players for this Bulls team right now, and certainly polarizing for the fan base, those who want to believe in him and those who are ready to cast aspersions upon him at every turn. I count myself as part of the latter group. Of course, I'm talking about Jabari Parker. He has had this string of games where in the first quarter, he comes out as a part of that starting five, looks aggressive early, uses some of his size to his advantage to bully guys back down, get some buckets around the rim. He's also knocked down a couple of outside shots recently when, to start the season, his outside shot was not looking all that good. And then after a strong first quarter, you know, again, it was 15 points, first quarter, 6 of 9 from the field, and then he just disappears in the second, third, and fourth quarters as these games progress. What do you think is happening there with Jabari starting hot and then falling off, and what do you feel about him overall right now compared to, say, 5 games into the season?
Jabari is a lost cause. I mean, I think we all knew this was going to be a bad decision when it was announced, when he was signed. The fact that the front office signed him to be a small forward and Hoiberg wouldn't even give him, you know, a second to play on the wing just shows to me that, you know, for however many positive things the Bulls have going for them in this rebuild, and I do think there are a few things, nothing's really going to change until the people who made the decision to sign Jabari Parker are gone. And the people who made the decision to sign Dwayne Wade, it's the same people in charge is the problem. So the Bulls can switch over the roster and talk about, you know, the 2021 plan or whatever it is at this point, but it's the same story every year. Because as long as decisions like signing Jabari Parker happen, the Bulls really don't have much hope for the future. That's something that a lot of fans probably don't want to hear, but I think it's the truth. You look at Parker, Hoiberg had to bench him, what, in the fourth game of the preseason this year? And that was when he was playing power forward, which is his best position. Hoiberg's bosses thought that he would be a small forward when they originally gave him the contract. I think that Parker has just proven again and again that this was a really bad decision by management, and they should frankly be humiliated that they ever even made this choice. You know, defensively, it speaks for itself. I mean, he has just shown a total disinterest in playing defense. The things he said in the media from the very start of his Bulls tenure have been truly humiliating and really worse than anything Derrick Rose ever said in the media, even though it felt like Rose's comments always got a lot more attention. offensively, Parker isn't even that good. He's an inefficient scorer. He over dribbles. He's taking long twos instead of threes. He just is not meant for the modern game. And I think, you know, if you look at sort of the trajectory of where the NBA has gone over this decade, and you look at, you know, how Jabari Parker's career has evolved from being a prep star to someone who's on the precipice of being a draft bust only a few years into his pro career, I think that, you know, the game just changed and the demands of a modern player changed, and Jabari stuck to his guns rather than evolving. And I'll bring up two guys as an example who went the other way. You could look at Blake Griffin and Kemba Walker. Blake Griffin recently had a 50-point night this season where he took 10 three-pointers. Now, if I would have told you guys that in 2010, you would have looked at me like I was crazy, because that wasn't part of Griffin's game. But Griffin saw the league change, and he changed with it. Kemba Walker, another guy, he never shot threes, or struggled to shoot threes, I should say, for the first, what, 4 or 5 years of his career in Charlotte. Now Kemba Walker's basically Steph Curry light. He's scoring 60 points on certain nights, and it's all because people were made to respect his jumper. Now, the three-pointer isn't everything, even in this day and age. It's just about having a more well-rounded, unselfish game. And Parker, to me, even though it seems like he has a big heart off the court, and he does seem like a really good guy who's done a lot of great social work in this city and in the country, he just has a selfish attitude on the court, and it's terrible because it's tanking what should be a very promising pro career for himself. And, you know, at this point, I wouldn't expect him to be in the NBA a few years from now.
See, that's what's crazy to me, is he didn't evolve from college. College, he could get a bucket wherever he wanted, basically body and manhandle people, and then that didn't change. And especially with the two torn ACLs, it's like you would think he would try to add some different elements to his game to make it more effective, where he knows he has to notice himself that he's going out there and can't do the same things he did two ACL tears ago. Like he's got to have some type of self-realization here. And my question for the Bulls this year, you know, whether or not he's going to be here next year, I think is pretty much an open and closed case at this point. I don't think there's anything he can do to basically pitch himself to the Bulls. Yeah, I'm worth $20 million next year too. So what happens with that locker room then? Does it become infectious when Jabari Parker, maybe towards the end of the season, just doesn't give a shit about anybody on the team, is going to go out there and play for himself and try to audition himself to all 29 other teams? And I know right now people are looking at him and saying no value there, but to him, I got to imagine the last 2 months of the season, if the Bulls are looking at it and saying, yeah, we're going to wave bye to you at the end of the season, that this could turn into, anytime Jabari's on the floor, it's Jabari himself and then everybody else. Like, what kind of, how does his attitude kind of grow on all these other guys who are going to be here around for the long term? How does that affect young guys like Markkanen and Carter and Levine, and in his attitude in general? And how does that spew over to the Bulls? Is that a good or a bad thing? And can they find a way to block that out if it's bad?
Yeah, they should just cut Jabari. I would be fine cutting him today, because we all realize this is a disaster already. ESPN's RPM rankings came out today. For people that don't know, that's kind of the best all-in-one stat we have in basketball, even though it does have some holes in it. But it gives you a pretty good picture of just a player's overall impact on winning on both ends of the court. Jabari Parker is literally ranked as the worst player in the NBA. And I think, you know, you're talking about how that selfish attitude will permeate through the team at the end of the season. Let's be honest, it's already happened. I think that he's been out there playing for himself the entire year. He's been obviously disgusted with his role on this team and with Hoiberg's decision to never even give him a chance, you know, from the start of the season. I think this is an open and closed case, as you said. And the quicker the Bulls move on from this, the better. I think Hoiberg realized it right away. And, you know, I just tie it into the long-term future of the franchise. It's like, whoever made this decision, everyone knew this was a bad decision. It was so similar to signing Wade and Rondo at the same time. It's like, this isn't second guessing. This was first guessing. And because of that, it gives me pause on everything this franchise is going to do in the future. Now, the one thing they could do is right their wrong immediately and just let Parker go. That would be tough for, you know, their marketing campaigns. That would be tough for maybe some of the ticket sales. But any sort of enlightened Bulls fan just realizes what a train wreck the Jabari Parker experience has been. And, you know, the sooner they move on, the better.
Yeah, I mean, Ricky, you're right in that this clearly is a failed experiment. But this is a front office that we have seen try to spin things for the positive. And I mean, we were just talking about campaign getting minutes a minute ago. I think part of that is that they're still trying to justify that trade with Oklahoma City a couple years ago, in which they gave away two of their top six guys in Taj and Doug, and a draft pick, and all they got in return was a campaign who can't really play in the NBA. And here he is still getting minutes. I'm with you. I think the best option for this Bulls team is to just cut Parker and walk away. But clearly we know with this front office and all the ways that we're familiar with how they operate, they're not going to do that. I don't see them doing that. And so now you're talking about what happens. This is a big common question among Bulls fans right now. What happens when not only Bobby Portis but Lauri Markkanen come back? And you got two more front court pieces. Certainly Markkanen, a cornerstone of the franchise moving forward. Bobby, hopefully a guy that they still want to keep around, even though they couldn't get that extension done before this season started. So now you're talking about Jabari no longer being in the starting lineup because, as you said, he can't play the three. Fred doesn't want to play him at the three. And you get two of your starting 4/5 guys back in Bobby and Markkanen. If the Bulls don't just cut Jabari and walk away, does he just get relegated to DNPs for the rest of the season?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it gets so bad that Hoiberg actually does play him on the wing. Of course, you're going to have Denzel Valentine coming back to be another wing option. Who knows what happens with Holiday? Justin Holiday's actually been pretty good this year in a role that, you know, he has no business being in, basically, as the primary scorer for this team when Levine's not on the floor. That's why I would advise just getting rid of Parker right now. But, you know, the thing that's going to be in the Bulls' best interest long-term, especially this year, starting off in such a deep hole, is tanking and racking up the losses as quickly as possible. Hoiberg's not going to want to do that because Hoiberg's fighting for his reputation as a coach. He's fighting for his next job as much as this current one, especially if he wants to stay at the NBA level. So Hoiberg's not just going to want to roll over and lose. From my perspective, I would just play Jabari at the three for the second half of the year. Let him play 35 minutes a night. Let him chuck you into losses every single time out there, and hopefully lead you to Zion Williamson. I mean, what a great chapter that would be for the Jabari Parker Bulls era. He could come in, do social work in the city for a year, get us our future star, and then he can leave and be happy and everyone could call it a success. But I don't think that's what's going to happen because of the way that Jabari's wired and the way that, you know, the front office and the coaching staff is sort of at odds or seemingly at odds right now. So I don't know what's going to happen with Jabari. I mean, he's definitely going to get buried in Hoiberg's rotation. Hoiberg obviously doesn't think very highly of him. You could tell that was the case from the very start of the season. So it's a bad situation for the Bulls and for Jabari personally. That's why I advise moving on right now if they can, and the sooner they do it, the easier it's going to be.
Let's go around the league now, just in a matter of trade value, especially early on. The Bulls don't have much, and there's not much that the competitive teams would want to pick off this Bulls roster. But just for humor sense here, let's talk about Holiday's value, maybe potentially Robin Lopez. And if the Bulls even think that they're not going to potentially re-sign Bobby Portis, could be an option at the trade deadline. Who has the most value out of the three of those guys? Can you realistically think that maybe Holiday will get moved at the deadline? Robin Lopez, I don't know where he would get moved. Or if Portis is in play, what kind of return can you get for all three of those guys? And that is that serious enough to where we can start talking about potential places where one or two of these guys can land and the Bulls can once again get some assets before the trade deadline is up this year?
Yeah, I think Holiday should for sure be moved. He would be useful on a lot of teams. He's shooting 7.5 threes a game right now and making 40% of them. It's just like he's the type of player that every good team could use as a depth option. Now, for the Bulls, he's been forced into the starting lineup as a guy who's playing literally 35 minutes a night. He has no business ever being in that role. But as like an eighth or ninth man on a good team who you could throw in for spot minutes in the playoffs, you could slide him between the two or the three. He's a versatile defender. I think a lot of good teams could use him as someone who's a bit player, if not a key part of the rotation. You look at the Sixers, I mean, they're going to need shooters now that they have done the Jimmy Butler trade, so I think he could be a good fit there. There's just a lot of teams that could use someone who's in Holiday's archetype. So, you know, what could the Bulls conceivably get back? They're not going to get a first-rounder for him, that's for sure. But even if they could get a decent-looking second-round pick or, you know, maybe multiple second-round picks, after just giving away their second-rounders and essentially disavowing them over the last decade or so, I think that would be a really good start for them. Just get something back for Justin Holiday. He's had, you know, a pretty nice year, so the Bulls deserve to capitalize that on that a bit. Portis, it's tough to trade a guy heading into restricted free agency. I just don't know how much value he's going to have, especially since we haven't been able to see everything he could do this year because of the injury. I doubt that Portis gets traded this year, but you know, that could be interesting as well. And Robin Lopez would essentially be free, I think. If someone wants to take Robin Lopez, they can take him off the Bulls' hands. He's been a really good veteran, great locker room guy. I think he helped Markkanen a lot last year as a rookie, especially on the glass. And he seems to have been a good soldier about the fact that he got benched for a 19-year-old in the preseason. So I think Robin Lopez is a great dude. I've loved having him on the team. It's been fun to cheer for him. But, you know, the Bulls should do Robin Lopez a solid at this point and just let him go to a team that's not a train wreck, because he deserves it at this point in his career.
But then we don't get the Robin Lopez gems of Bulls social media. I mean, honestly, I think I'd miss that as much as I miss Robin's production on the court. But I mean, I'm with you, Ricky. I think that makes the most sense. Speaking of the Bulls doing what they can in a season that just got derailed right off the get-go from injuries, there seems to be a differing perspective among the fan base, of course, because that's how it always works, as far as what the Bulls should do when they get their pieces back. Should this be a tanking team again this season? Based on this slow start, we might be seeing the ousting of Fred Hoiberg before the season is over. So instead of trying to flip this script on 4-12 and scrape their way back towards maybe fighting for a seventh or eighth seed in a bad East, let's just, you know, turn and burn towards the top of the tankathon standings again. I think that makes the most sense. If you look around the league, the Bulls at 4 wins right now have more wins than only the Hawks, the Cavs, and the Suns, who they play on Wednesday. The Knicks also with 4 wins. Looking at those teams that seem to be at the top of the tank standings right now, do you see that that being the case when we're all said and done and have played 82 games? Do you think the Bulls have a realistic shot to end up somewhere top 3 to top 5 in that tank list?
They better. Tank. That's what they should be doing the rest of the year. And you hope they pile up the losses now, because when Markkanen comes back, when Dunn comes back, when Portis and Valentine come back, they're probably not going to be that bad, especially with Hoiberg, who I think has shown some pretty smart coaching acumen this year, despite the results on the court. You would think that, you know, they're not going to be horrible. So I hope that they pile up all these losses now. And if you want to push it, you know, one step further, for as negative as we've been about the Bulls this year, for as negative as I typically am about the long-term direction of the team, I really think if you add someone like Zion Williamson, the entire culture of the franchise would just change around overnight, and their rebuild would suddenly be looking really optimistic. I mean, if he's someone who is, you know, that superstar-level guy, which I think he can be, now you have a core of Williamson, Markkanen, Carter, Levine. Williamson's presence would just sort of knock everyone else into the correct role. Like, I think a lot of people have been saying, people who haven't watched him much, well, is he a three? Could he fit with this core? To me, his position is just basketball. And by that, I mean, he's going to be an initiator on offense. He's essentially going to be the de facto point guard, I think, when he gets into the pros. Sort of a similar role to what you see Luka Doncic doing on the Mavs this year. You know, it's just like the way the game has changed. It's like your point guard isn't essentially your offensive initiator these days. Ben Simmons plays that role. James Harden plays that role. LeBron plays that role. Luka plays that role. It's just the guy who's getting you into your sets, running pick and rolls. To me, that's going to be Williamson's role offensively in the NBA, and defensively, I think he's going to be able to check a variety of positions. So that immediately pushes Levine off the ball a little bit more, makes him be your number two option, even if he's, you know, still having the highest points per game average. It lets Markkanen and Carter sort of focus on what they can do best rather than competing for shots with Levine. Williamson is shown to be an unselfish player, a good passer. And to me, even though, you know, right now, I think he's only projected third in ESPN's mock draft, and, you know, RJ Barrett still seems to be the consensus number one. Zion is going to be the consensus number one by the time the draft rolls around. And even sooner, I think. Like, the conversation is going to be RJ Barrett versus Cam Reddish versus Bol Bol versus Kevin Porter. I don't think the conversation is going to be with Zion, because I believe he will be the consensus number one. So if the Bulls can tank, and if they can give themselves a chance to get him during a year when the lottery odds have been flattened, when you know, there isn't as much incentive to be totally near the bottom of the standings as there has been the last few years, it could change everything for the Bulls. I mean, overnight, the Bulls could go from looking like a disaster, who in the best case scenario, they're overpaying a free agent and competing for the sixth seed in perpetuity. That's what happens if they don't get Zion. If they get Zion, I think, like, it's just everything's different. Like, suddenly they have a really bright future in the East and everything changes. So to me, you got to give yourself the best mathematical odds to get him. The top three teams in this new lottery system all have a 14% chance to land the number one pick. And then after that, it decreases a little bit. So, you know, even though the NBA has tried to get rid of tanking with these new lottery odds, there's still a big incentive to do it. And from what I've seen, both at the high school level, watching him in AAU and on USA Basketball, and then what I've seen from him in college during his brief career, I think Williamson is totally worth tanking for, and he's someone who could just change everything for this franchise should they get him.
So that's interesting, because I was thinking back to even just last year, you know, when we were talking prospects at this time, Marvin Bagley was gaining a lot of attention, was pretty much the bulk of the conversation, Trey Young too as well. So what it sounds like is you don't think that there's all of a sudden going to be a shift once conference play starts in college basketball about Zion Williamson, saying, oh, I don't like if he comes off a bad game or a couple stretches where teams are playing him really well. Are we all of a sudden going to shift our conversation saying, well, I don't know if he's going to be that consensus number one? Or do you think that traction is going to gain throughout? Because look at Marvin Bagley. Like, even though Marvin Bagley was still at the top of that conversation, I thought that people, the hype around him wasn't as significant once conference play started. And same thing with Trey Young. Trey Young struggled during conference play last year, and the hype was a little bit decreased. So is there anybody in the top seven in college basketball that you could see sliding down the boards once conference play starts, or rising on the boards once conference play starts in January?
Yeah, to me, RJ Barrett's the guy who's going to get exposed, because Barrett, you know, he has been viewed as the consensus number one from the time he entered this class as a high school player who reclassified to play college hoops this year. He was the guy who, you know, at every level of high school ball, he was battle tested. He famously led Canada to beat John Calipari's USA team on the FIBA U18 tournament one summer ago. He was MVP of Basketball Without Borders. RJ Barrett just has this long checklist of accomplishments as a prep player, consensus number one coming into the year, the obvious front runner to be the first pick in the draft heading into this season. But to me, Williamson is just so much better already. Like, you can just tell that Zion is that guy, and that Barrett, while I do think he'd be a pretty nice consolation prize for the Bulls or any other franchise at number two or number three or whatever it is, I just don't think that he has anything like super special about him that could, you know, single-handedly elevate a franchise. To me, he would just be like another piece to the puzzle, and a good one, but not someone who's going to like change everything the way that Williamson could. So I think if you're looking for your guy who's going to get exposed a little bit, I would look at him. I'm really high on Williamson. I'm probably higher on him than most people who write about the draft and cover the draft, but I think he has that type of upside. And I think, you know, his mentality and his approach to the game is so serious, and I think that that's what really stands out about him. On both ends of the floor, he's just a really selfless team first guy. And that's, you know, what him and I think Wendell Carter have in common, is that they're both guys who value the team over individual accomplishments. So, you know, Williamson has some holes in his game for sure. I mean, he's going to be a reluctant shooter at best. He's just a really unique player. So he doesn't fit into any sort of like existing archetype that you see throughout the NBA, which is going to give GMs pause. I mean, you know, Luka Doncic, three teams passed on him, even though every smart person agreed he was the best player in the draft. Three teams still passed on him. So who knows if Williamson actually will go number one, but I think he's going to be the best player. And, you know, if the Bulls could get him, I really think it would change quite a bit for the franchise.
It's always a pleasure listening to you talk about these college prospects, Ricky, because you clearly know your stuff. And of course, you can always read Ricky's stuff on College Hoops Players at SB Nation. But also, Ricky, tell us a little bit about this new College Hoops podcast that you started recently.
Yeah, I'm doing it with Mike Rutherford. It's called Palpable Buzz, College Basketball Podcast. That's a John Rothstein joke, if you follow college basketball at all. You're probably familiar with that one. Rutherford is a pro. Rutherford hosts a daily ESPN radio show in Louisville. He's really, really good at talking about sports. I just try not to mess it up and stay out of his way. Mike is the clear star. I'm just hanging on to his coattails. But Rutherford and I have been working together at SBNation.com doing college basketball coverage for like 5 years or more at this point. So we have a pretty good rapport, and that's been fun to start from doing that alongside another Bulls podcast with Jason Pat, which has been fun to do too. So it's been something that has kept me kind of invested in this basketball season, even as the Bulls have clearly seen their chances slip away early in the year. And it'll be fun to stick with it.
Yeah, and just real quick, talk to us a little bit about cash considerations with you and our guy Jason Pat. Clearly, I mean, you know, you made a wisecrack about it being a bad time to start a Bulls pod when we started today's episode, but I mean, Bulls fans have all sorts of options as far as ways to get their Bulls content. You know, there's us, there's, you know, C Red Fred's got a pod, the Athletic guy's got a pod, there's Bulls pods all over the place. But, you know, some might say oversaturated market, but when I saw the words that you and Pat were doing a Bulls pod together, I was elated, and it has not disappointed so far. Tell our listeners, in case they have been living under a rock, where they can find you guys and that cash considerations pod.
Yeah, Jason and I have started our Cash Considerations Bulls podcast. You can find that anywhere you get your podcast. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all that. Now, thanks to Jason for being more technologically savvy than me, because he is taking the mantle on all that. So thanks to Jason. Obviously, we cannot compete with the Locked On Bulls podcast, the premier Bulls podcast in the game. But, you know, Jason and I just kind of wanted to start our own thing because we feel like we've both sort of endeared ourselves to the fan base in a sense, because I think we both just don't have an agenda when we talk about the Bulls. We just try to be honest. And, you know, we don't really feel the need to cater to both sides or to present a fair story or anything like that. We just tell the truth, or we try to tell the truth, what we perceive to be the truth about the franchise. So I think that it's been fun to do, and, you know, it's been tough watching some of these games. I mean, when you're going back and rewatching a 40-point blowout, it's like, what am I doing with my life here? At the same time, you know, hopefully it pays off one day and we will have a good team to talk about. I think it's certainly possible with the way Carter has played and the way that LaVine has exceeded expectations. So, you know, we'll see. It's been fun to do so far.
Ricky, yeah, real quick, last question for you. End of the season, is Fred Hoiberg still the coach of the Bulls? Matt says no, I say yes. This even going back to, we started this at opening night, even from what you've just seen, is Fred Hoiberg still the coach end of 2019?
I don't end think he's going to be the coach next season, at the start of next season. If the question is, will he be fired in season? I mean, I don't know. The injuries almost help him in a sense, because it's hard to criticize him when he's been down four of his best guys, two of his starters. So it's tough. I think that he probably survives the season, though I don't say that with much confidence. But there's no way Fred Hoiberg is the Bulls coach next year. I would be really surprised. And, you know, I could defend Hoiberg if I wanted to, but then again, has he really earned it? He hasn't done too much. So I don't know if it's totally his fault, but he doesn't really deserve – much of a defense from us either.
Yeah, well, it's only a matter of time until Hoiberg Jr., who's making noise over at Michigan State, you know, comes in and is the next guy that Gar has pegged to lead this Bulls team. Ricky, we always appreciate you stopping by Locked On Bulls. Always a pleasure to chat. Get all of Ricky's great hoops content, both college and NBA, by following on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky and finding his stuff at SB Nation. And of course, the new pods, Cash Considerations and College Hoops. You can never get enough Ricky O'Donnell if you're a Bulls fan. Ricky, have a great week, bud. Look forward to seeing your week, seeing your work all week long, and come by again sometime soon, okay?
See you, Ricky.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bud. Have a good one.
Well, that's good about dude here for Locked On Bulls. Thanks again to Ricky O'Donnell for hopping on with us. You can follow him on social media on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. All of his stories, all of his analysis at SBNation.com. Follow him over there. He does great work. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. Download the Dash Radio app. Listen to the show 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, @Bulls_Peck, and @LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. If you enter to win the Wendell Carter Jr. jersey we were giving away on Twitter late last week, we'll be announcing that on Twitter today, so go over there. We'll announce the winner tomorrow's episode, but if you want to know if you won today, head over to Twitter, check out our Twitter page, check your DMs, make sure they're open, and we will let you know if you are one of our lucky winners of the Wendell Carter Jr. jersey we were giving away. Our text and voicemail line is at 331-979-1369. Drop your voicemails, drop your text messages. We're going to be doing a full mailbag on Wednesday. So if you want to get your voice on the show. You want to get your opinion crossed, drop us a voicemail, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Ricky O'Donnell, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with another great interview, so get excited for that. For Jordan, Matt, and Ricky, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com